Yeah, so you've heard a lot already about research data and the possibility of using linked data for publishing research data. I want to give you in this last talk my very particular view on this and tell you where we are and what we're trying to do. So, papers, that's what scientists care most about. They are still today in many disciplines the main mode, main means for publication of results, for dissemination of one's own work, and also the main means for scientific communication. However, they have, of course, a number of limitations. Right? First, I always regret often that sometimes I cannot work with a paper. You can read ideas in a paper, you can try to understand the paper, but playing around with the paper is extremely difficult. So imagine I want to deploy my own methods or my own algorithms or approaches to this paper or to the scenarios described there or to the data described there. This is very hard today. We cannot get access to the full data, right? Typically, in a paper, you have only an aggregated view of the data that someone has assembled together to make a point. It's difficult to check and validate the results because you don't have access to the raw data. Difficult to reproduce results. Difficult to aggregate results or data points across papers. And something that Klaus Tochtermann mentioned also, repurposing. That's also very difficult, right? I mean, take, for example, the data from one paper and transform it into something that you can use, for example, in your own work. That's all very difficult today. So the question is, how can these things be overcome? So we have talked a lot about linked data, but let me go back to a vision. A vision by Tim Berners-Lee, right? The inventor of the web and the inventor of the semantic web. He gave a talk in 2009, a very nice talk at TED, where essentially he cried, "Raw data now!" That's what he called for, right? And what he wanted is to pursue people, well, to release data from closed silos and publish them so that other people could reuse them, right? And his idea was the one of creating an ecosystem of open data that supports the combination reuse of data by third parties, not only by the people that own the data, right? And he proposed to use open standards for doing this, right? But also, of course, the linked data principles that you've heard a lot, and indeed, I will skip them. But I will not skip this picture here for one reason. Okay, you've seen that picture many times. But this gives another interesting view, which is about if you look at where's the research data here. Well, we try to look at this, and the black circles represent something that could be termed research data. Okay, but what are these data? These are, to a large extent, curated databases, right? That have been accumulated in big projects. So Johanna gave a talk about ABI, for example. Well, ABI, for example, and EMBL has many curated databases where a lot of effort has been gone into to develop them. But what I want to talk here is about not about large projects that release curated databases, but let's say about supporting small research groups or researchers and making their experimental data accessible. So that's a different thing that is, for now, still missing in this cloud. In science, we often have the situation that valuable data is really not available, right? And there are many reasons for this. There's high effort involved in publishing data, right? You need to clean up the data, you need to provide manuals maybe so that people can use it. Very importantly, there's a lack of incentives for people to do so. This is changing. There are many communities in which incentives are created. Sometimes there's also a competitive advantage in not releasing data. Right? Some people profit from this in terms of careers or in terms of having a competitive advantage compared to competitors and so on. And sometimes there's lack of expertise, for example, in semantic web standards or in linked open data principles or other ways to provide open data. But, you know, if you look at the very interesting talk of Peter Weingart yesterday, right? I mean, an implication, if we want to be fair to this idea of openness that he talked about, then this means that the data also has to be released, of course, right? It cannot be, it cannot be closed, right? And ultimately, from a very pragmatic point of view, it has been paid by people who are interested that the data is disseminated as widely as possible to make the maximum out of it. Right? So economic principles are also important here. There's also a political dimension to all this, as you all know. Right? It's not just researchers wanting to release that data. There are a lot of funding agencies and even important advisory groups in Germany that have clearly committed to the idea of publishing data in open ways. Right? For example, DFG has at least a strong commitment to open access and to long-term archiving, which is not the same as releasing data openly. Okay? So we should not mistake this. But there's a clear commitment there. The Wissenschaftsrat, for those who you don't know, this is the most important consulting agency in Germany that consults politics at the federal state level, but also at the state level and at the federal level on university policies and infrastructure questions and research. For example, they released documents where the first one, where they explicitly mentioned the possibility of using linked open data principles as a viable option for publishing library metadata, so for opening the metadata there. And one very important document here, the second one, Übergreifende Empfehlung zu Informationsstrukturen, where the Wissenschaftsrat clearly mentioned that quantitative and empirical data, as well as theoretical results of different provenance, should be made globally available to everyone. Right? That's a very clear commitment. The European Commission also is in this direction. So the idea is, how do we do it? Okay, how do we make this possible that researchers, small research groups, publish their data? My message today is that, it's this idea of creating an ecosystem where scientific data can be published and reused using linked data formats or other open formats. And my main message is the infrastructure needed for this is already there. Right? We have the World Wide Web. We have appropriate protocols. There are standards available, RDF, Sparkle. There are already search engines that index linked data and can be queried. So in my view, what I want to talk about today is that there are two things missing. So the technology seems to be there, but there are two key ingredients that seem so far missing. One is incentives. So how do we stimulate this? And second is a methodology that, for example, researchers can follow in doing that. And I think there's really a gap there, something that is missing. So I will mainly be talking about methodology, because that's what we're currently working on. So ultimately, what would we support? Well, we would support the community of researchers to find relevant data, data that is related to their own research, to check and validate data of others, right? To reproduce even experiments, and so on. And of course, in all this, provenance data is key. So our particular goal in this scenario is to develop a methodology that supports scientists in publishing their research or experimental data as linked open data. And so far, what we have done is work on use cases that guide our developments. And these use cases I will present you today. These are use cases with scientists at Bielefeld University in the natural sciences that are willing to share their data openly. So the first use case, this guy on the left that you see is Thomas Koop. He's a professor of physical chemistry at Bielefeld. He works with aerosols. So aerosols are particles that are involved in many atmospheric processes. And according to new insights, it's known that certain water-soluble organics that are found in the troposphere, so very high, at very high altitude levels, inhibit crystal formation and, are responsible, often, and affect cloud formation. So for Thomas Koop, it was very important to compile a list from the literature about so-called glass transition temperature values of various substances, right? And some years ago, he performed a literature survey to get this data, so different glass transition temperatures. And at the end, he collected 596 data points that were very important for his research from 22 publications. And he needed more than 100 hours of work for this. So this shows that it's highly difficult to access data in an aggregated manner beyond the single paper. And that's something that is causing trouble to people who have to work in a way similar as Thomas Koop. So at the end, what Thomas did is he produced an aggregated diagram of all this data, published a paper on this survey, and probably is famous now for this, I don't know, but in any case, what I'm saying is this is a use case that we're currently working with, right? So we want to reproduce this and create methods that would make this task that Thomas Cope had to perform several times manually easier, or partially even automate that task. So the idea is that we want to offer functionality that such a researcher can collect all this data from different papers automatically. And, well, he could use standard semantic web infrastructure to do this, right? Go to a semantic search engine, query for the data, and then generate the views or diagrams that he needs and publish the results without this tremendous effort. So the way we structure our work, we are guided by so-called competency questions that come from the researchers that we're involved in. These competency questions are well known from ontology engineering design, and in some sense, they tell us how the researchers would like to ultimately use the data. Right? So for example, Thomas Cope had requirements. He wanted to answer queries at the end. Give me all glass transition temperatures of organic compounds. Give me all glass transition temperatures of amino acids measured by differential scanning, calorimetry, and something like which substances form glasses at temperature, at a certain temperature and pressure, and so on. So there are many technical challenges here that I have to be honest, we have not solved, but of course, one is vocabulary alignment. If you assume that every researcher publishes their data using a different vocabulary, then indeed we have a problem, and we need to align these vocabularies. We need to make sure that the researcher can trace back the single data points, where they come from, who created them, and of course, we need suitable methods for indexing all this data so that these queries can be actually performed. A second use case that we're currently considering is one with another professor at Bielefeld University. This is on the left, is Volker Dürr. He works with, well, he's the head of the biological cybernetics group, and he works with insects. So he's interested in how insects, like those on the right, these are so-called stick insects, adapt their locomotion behavior to specific environments. So he studies stick insects because the nervous system of these insects is quite known and quite simple. So you can sort of, you know, trace back behavior to information processing aspects that are well understood. And what he does, essentially, he has experimental settings like this, where insects are, you put certain markers on insects. So these balls that you see there are markers that are put on certain parts of the insect so that it can be traced by special cameras. And then on this basis, what Volker Dürr can do is he can reconstruct the angles of the different limbs of the insect, right? So he can recompute the angle along the motion trajectory. And he's interested in publishing this data so that other researchers can use it, compare it to other data from similar organisms, and so on. So here the use case is that a researcher could download this data set, right? He's given enough information so that this researcher can recompute the course of joint angles from the measured data. And as a result, the researcher could, for example, perform a simulation of the organism or compare the data to own measurements on the same or a similar organism. So interesting questions would be things like, give me all motion captured data sets about insects or even about stick insects, and allow me to recompute the position of the angles and compared with my own data. So where are we now? We are currently developing a methodology how this could become possible together with the scientists that we are working with. Something that I can advance is that we regard the role of that we call a data curator as a crucial ingredient towards accomplishing these scenarios and this vision that I've outlined. I'll mention the role of this data curator in a minute. First, let me walk through the methodology. So typically what we do is we have a kickoff meeting with scientists, right? We want to understand why they want to release data or why they think this is useful to other researchers and so on. Then in a second step, we try to define the goals. These are the competency questions. So they tell us, you know, at the end, a researcher should be able to do this and that with the data I release. And this is very important because it guides the scope. Right? A project without scope is very difficult to implement. So this scopes the project and what kind of data will be released at the end. Then we need somebody really in this process that at least has a superficial understanding of what the researcher is doing. Right? That's what we call knowledge acquisition. So we need someone that maybe reads the most important papers of this person to get a rough idea of what they are doing, why they are doing, and so on. In order, for example, to do something like in the fourth step, to choose appropriate vocabularies, right? So if we want to have some degree of interoperability and not that everyone uses their own vocabulary, we have to make sure that, well, we choose vocabularies that are already used by others. So vocabulary reuse is important. And for this, we need somebody who is both acquainted with the researcher, what he does, why he does it, but also with semantic web principles and available vocabularies, and who can decide which vocabularies to use or not. So that's an important role, the role of one of a data curator. So then we move to, once this is done, to implementation, which is not a difficult thing. I mean, it's just finally about publishing data's RDF, releasing it on the web. And of course, monitoring is very important, right? Because monitoring would allow a researcher to see how is my data used, which queries are made to my data. That could give essential feedback about maybe which additional data to release or what part of the data to document in a better way, and so on. So this is the methodology that we're currently implementing with our use case partners. And I want to stress again that there are many, we realize in our project that there are many, many vocabularies available to describe data, right? There's generic vocabularies to describe provenance of data, right? Express things like where does the data come from and so on. There's a lot of ways to describe bibliographic data. And there are a huge number of also domain-specific vocabularies. And it's important to understand that the publication of linked data is something that is indeed an intellectual process, right? Because it requires somebody that understands both the research, possibly at a superficial level, but there has to be some understanding, and at the same time can use this knowledge to choose the best vocabularies available on the web to publish the data or invent new pieces of vocabulary that are linked to existing ones. And this is a non-trivial activity. That's something that we are realizing, and that's the reason why we think that the role of a data curator is of huge importance in our methodology. Good. So taking stock. This fits all into a research direction or into a vision that I call, or many people call, open science, which is about making, well, not only papers, but actually research products available to the public, to the researchers. In particular, I've talked here about linked open science, which for me consists in applying linked data technology and semantic technologies to accomplish this. Right? So in terms of the vision of Terminus Lee, we could say we're talking about raw research data now. My message is that the infrastructure and standards already exist. Okay, so all these things have been taken care of by the W3C. There are recommendations on many of the things that we need, query languages, RDF as description language, and so on. It's important to move towards creating incentives, but also looking at methodologies that people can adopt in publishing their research data as linked data. So we have here a proposal for a methodology that we are currently following. Of course, we have still no real empirical data. We have not validated that because these are our first use cases. And we think that we will need, in the long term, people that take the special role of data curators, right? That can sit down with the scientists, understand what they need, what they want, what they do, and can translate this into data formats, choices of vocabulary, and so on. And another important thing is, I think that the beauty of this approach of linked data is that it's decentralized. Okay, so what I'm talking here is about every researcher or every research organization can then create the infrastructure to put their research data to make it public. And I think this is important because we feel, and this is what the scientists tell us that we talk to, they want to be in control of their data. They want to be able to make changes to the data. And this is compatible with this linked data approach, which allows sort of to publish data in a decentralized fashion. But then, of course, we need the infrastructure of possibly dedicated search engines that index that and provide the aggregated query functionality that I talked about in the beginning. So finally, a message to you. I think that, well, I'm in line with many people here. Heiner talked about this. I think we need to start talking about what it means to publish research data together with classical paper data, how we create links, what it could mean to have interactive papers that allow us to play around with the data, generate different views on the data, and so on. And with that, I close thanking both the Cognitive Interaction Technology Excellence Center here in Bielefeld that has funded this work, and also Cort Villiers, who has worked with me on these topics. So I thank you very much for your attention, and I hope the last talk has not disappointed you. Thank you very much.